And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It is beer, metal, swearing, and surprising recordings. Of course, I am Nick Cameron of Glacially Musical, joined by my good friend, my co-host, a man who's always clear, who's always concise, who's always ready to put on a clinic, Keefe Clinician. How are we doing today, buddy?
All righty. All right. I'm good. How's it going?
I am good. I am in a weird mood. I got inconsequential bad news, which is not a thing, really. I don't know. I'm having a good day. Anyway, if you are here for the first time, you missed the first episode of Queen, along with lots of episodes on Iron Maiden, Metallica, Black Sabbath, and loads more. Symphony X, that's a video game. Already Amtrak, off the rails. Everybody have a bump. You know what I mean? Red Hot Chili Peppers, they did cocaine. Way off the rails. Anyway, here's how we do this. We do a greeting, a vinyl check, a beer check, a news check, followed by a shirt check. The meat of the day, followed by meat of the day. Meat of the day this week is Queen 2, which is not Queen number 2, because that would imply that it's poo-poos. My beer of the week. I got Keefe laughing and he's muted. That's the best. Because we're going to have like no Keefe for about 90 seconds because it's going to take him a while to get out of this. My beer of the week is Iron Hops Brewing Battle Brew. One of the two St. Louis Battle Hawks. Your first place in the United Football League team. And undisputed attendance champions. Finger fudge pour down the middle. This is a 6.2% IPA. It is absolutely delicious for this week's Battlehawks game because it starts in the morning. I'm going to get a caw-caw lager. Over to you, Keefe.
Can you make the caw-caw sound?
Caw-caw! Hey, man, caw is the law in St. Louis.
The caw is the law, like the claw is the law? That's funny.
That actually started with a radio show when the Battlehawks came in 2020. They decided that caw-caw was going to be the thing. And the Vince McMahon-led XFL was like, no, that's stupid. We're not touching that. And then when The Rock got involved, he's like, wait a minute. You mean there's a fan base that sells way more tickets than anybody else who's doing organic things, making their own chants and cheers? We are going to lean the fuck into that. And that's why we have 40,000 a game in the UFL.
That makes a lot of sense. The only first-place team I care about right now is the first-place Rangers. Your leading wins leader and points leader in the NHL this season.
I'm pretty sure hockey's over this year.
It's over for you. It's not for me.
Nah, hey, we have one more game. We're going to go watch the last game tonight, and you know, I'm going to cry in my beer.
That's fair. I don't have a beer check. Of course, I have a liquid death. Severed line.
Murder your thirst.
Nick with the cue, and I'm going to pour it into my, guess what? My glacially musical poured glass.
Just for the record, I have one of those, too.
Doesn't look very clean.
Did you clean that? I mean, that thirst is murdered. There's like the DNA residue of a thirst murder in there.
Hopefully the thirst trap murder. Maybe I should have murdered that thirst trap. Hopefully the lime in this seltzer cures whatever ails me.
Cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
Alrighty, because I am terrible, incorrigible, and cannot be stopped. My vinyl check this week is a threefer. Disc one. I didn't even know this dude made records. You may know him as the devil. You may think of him as Mr. Body's butler. But for me, he'll always be Frankenfurter. Tim Curry. Simplicity. It's his third album. He did a series of rock records in the late 70s, early 80s. I got this at the Record Space, which is on Gravoy in Afton, just outside of the city limits. And I can't get it back in the thing properly. Pretty cheap, actually. It was only $8. I thought, you know what? $8, Tim Curry? I'm down. Number two. Remember when I said I am incorrigible and cannot be stopped? Here is evidence of that. My second record of the week, Kiss, Music from the Elder. Now you're probably thinking, Nick, don't you already have that? Yes, I did. However, this is an English first pressing. So this is an original pressing of the record, which has the original track listing. When this album was written, recorded, and played for the record label, Mercury Records, which was the first release that Kiss put out for their new label, they listened to it and went, oh my God, this is the worst thing we've ever heard. So what they did was they changed the running order. They put the best song, The Oath, which is the best song, best Paul song on the record. And it's the most rockingest heavy metal song on the record. And it was the first Kiss song to have blast beats, kind of. Only Kiss song to have blast beats, kind of. Anyway, so they put it first, completely screwing the pooch on the storyline of the record. That's what they did. And I wanted to be able to do an A to B. You may recall we did a vinyl pressings episode in the past. I am now upgrading pressings of records because I'm out to lunch, frankly. Number three, I did not realize I was grabbing this one, but here it is. I've become quite the Billy Joel fan in recent days. So here we have Billy Joel Piano Man, original pressing. This is not a fancy pants modern day. I got this for the princely sum of $12 at the antique mall.
Do you know what year that was pressed? Because the early Billy Joel songs, the first Billy Joel album is actually terribly recorded and had very speeded for some reason because it was so fucked up. So I'm curious to know what year that was pressed because the early Billy Joel albums do not sound as good as they could.
This one sounds quite... I've only listened to it once. It sounded fine. I mean, it sounded quite good to me.
Interesting.
And I yield my time.
All right. Funny enough that Billy Joel has, some of the greatest selling records of all time, but he actually made no money in the 70s at all. Very similar to a lot of your popular rock guys.
I'm still trying to convince lawyer wife to let me go to see Billy Joel this year.
I think it's last time
in St. Louis. I think it's last time.
He's definitely looking at retirement, so go see him now. If things work out for me financially, maybe I'll join you there because I love Billy Joel. I'd love to see him at the Garden because it's sentimental to me, but I wouldn't mind seeing him anywhere.
Frankly, I would rather see him anywhere besides Busch Stadium.
Right. Right. Piano does sound extra good in a sports. I saw him at Yankee Stadium for the first time in 1990.
Arena shows and dome shows sound better than outdoor stadium shows. That is just the reality of the world and physics.
He sounded good back then. He had a huge band. All right, anyway, well, Billy Joel is another time. I have a 1-4 today. I am finally up to the late fall of 2023 in my vinyl checks. This is a record that was a Record Store Day release, but I bought it from the band at the show. This is the band Otto Locos Live in Venice. This is the band that features the son of Robert Trujillo of Metallica, Ty Trujillo, also of Korn, also currently of Suicidal Tendencies, the job his dad once had. This is a live album. This was actually their first release, and then they put out their full-length record last year after this. So front cover, really cool art. Back cover, cool photo, Polaroids-ish of the band. And it came on this gnarly transparent blue for Record Store Day. See-through. Look at that gorgeous bad boy. Clear, transparent blue with the cool logo. Kind of almost looks like the Liquid Death logo a little bit.
A nice transparent, a translucent colored record is always just absolutely wonderful.
Now, just for the record itself was $25, but for $35, they were trying to get rid of all their merch at the time because they were trying to make room for new merch. So for $35, I got the record, a shirt, and this lenticular postcard of the band. I don't know if it's going to show up on video, but you can kind of see it's 3D. Looks like a Tool album cover with a... Very cool. Photo by Edgar Baradas. 2023 Otto, all rights reserved. There might have even been a patch also. So it was quite a deal for $35. I felt like I was supporting the band. This was them opening for Suicidal Tendencies, and it was amazing. On the 40th anniversary tour of Suicidal, playing the debut album and hits.
Very cool. How do you follow that up? You don't. So I'm going to do my news check. I have one bit of news that actually affects me personally. About a month and a half ago, lawyer wife and I purchased tickets to see what passes for the Guess Who. There was no questions in my brain. Now, some might argue that I am an educated music fan. I would say you're right. I know who's in every band at every given time that I love. I knew what I was buying tickets for at River City Casino for $35 to sit in a room, you know, musically speaking, the size of the sitting room that I'm in now. I knew what I was getting into. It is the drummer only. And apparently he's not even there all the time. But you know what? They're going to play some cool Guess Who songs. And to quote Lester Bangs, give me the Guess Who. They're drunken buffoons, and that makes them poetic. Right? Hear me out. Well, apparently they've lawyered up. Brian Cummings, the original lead singer and author of such Guess Who songs as American Woman, has filed lawsuits with Randy Bachman, also of Bachman Turner Overdrive, stating that the current holders of the trademark of the Guess Who are ripping off the fans. No, they're playing in casinos, bro. They're playing tiny little rooms to no one, and half of the crowd has tickets because they got comped by the casino. It's what it is. I have seen several bands. Actually, I saw a Fleetwood Mac tribute band, as I mentioned last week. I saw them there on Thursday. So that's the level that the current trademark holders of the Guess Who are. They are playing the same rooms as tribute bands. Which makes sense, because basically they are a tribute band. Well, anyway, so the lawsuit came in December of last year, stating that this is a fraud. They are defrauding the public, stating blah, 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 whatever, right? As Roger Waters once put it, the trade name of the band is more valuable than the writer's first name and last name. He told a story about playing a 3,000-seater in Ohio on the Radio Chaos tour. And the next night, Pink Floyd was playing a football stadium that was sold out while he could not even fill the 3,000-seater playing his songs. Hey, that's the reality, bro. You know, Pink Floyd sells more than Roger Waters. But guess who sells more than Brian Cummings? So he has gone nuclear and pulled his songs that he wrote out of the publishing lexicon, meaning no one can play American Woman. No one can play American Woman on the radio. No one can play American Woman in the gas station on Muzak. It has been pulled out of all publishing rights. No one can sing it, no one can play it, and it cannot be broadcast anywhere. That is how far he's going. And what passes for the Guess Who has now canceled three or four shows in a row. I have tickets to see them next month, and I would like to see that stupid show. It's gonna be stupid. I know what it is. I'm not an idiot. I want to see these guys that are vaguely related to the Guess Who playing Guess Who songs. It's cool. I would go see Brian Cummings if he weren't playing at the factory 35 miles west. But he's in the middle of nowhere. I'd rather go see the place with the steakhouse. Go see the guys playing in the place with a steakhouse and a hotel. That's better for Nick. Although last week I had a steak there, and I'm not having a steak there ever again. I'm done with that. It was not good. It was $50 for a New York strip. It was overcooked. I asked for medium rare, and I got medium. It was very salty. The rub was terrible. And then I had to pay $8 for a goddamn potato, and I didn't even get a salad. What the hell, 1904 Steakhouse? Come on. If you buy a steak, you get a salad and a potato. That's the rules. I didn't make them up. This is Pittsburgh rules. This is Texas rules. It's everywhere. Fuck off. I yield my time.
Fair enough. Is that your only news item?
Correct. That is my only one. So check back next month to see if I actually see what passes for the Guess Who next month. We'll see.
Oh, my. Record Store Day is this Saturday, 4:20.
I'm going.
Just a reminder, I'm also going to go. My store last year, 2 years ago, opened at 8 a.m., line around the block, 50 people deep.
I ain't doing that.
Took me about 15 minutes to get in, got most of what I went for. Last year, no notice, nothing. Didn't know they weren't opening for Record Store Day. I was there at earlier, like 7 a.m. No one is there. I was like, something is wrong. Then I go look at their Instagram, their Facebook, nothing. then their website says, not opening for Record Store Day. Come in at 12 and see what we have.
What would have been nice would have been a sign on the door. Just going to throw that out
there. No sign
on
the door. It's a cooperative-owned record store, so the profits go back into the store, and the employees share the profits daily.
Somebody could have brought a notebook and a pencil.
Anything. A marker, anything, y'all. Tape it to the gate, anything. This year, they're reopening for the morning, so I will try to be early and see if I can get some things. I don't have quite a lot of disposable money to shop with, but I'm going to do my best. So Record Store Days this week.
I'm looking for one record this year, Eric Carr's Unfinished Business. I do not expect to find it. The versions of Rockology that I would have purchased were not there. We still have oceans of the Rockology picture disc, which I will not purchase.
Fair enough. Also, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is going to announce on Sunday, 4/21, their class of 2024 during American Idol. I cannot think of a dumber, non-consequential way to announce a thing. I understand why pop culture, in terms of eyeballs, I could see it being a huge thing. And a lot of people do the second screen thing where they watch Idol and tweet and text at the same time. So maybe there's some crossover with like a Mary J. Blige if she gets in or something. But like, not feeling great about it, gotta be honest. Ozzy ended the fan voting basically in second place, which to me is a feat.
That's an amazing feat.
Behind Dave Matthews' band.
That sucks ass.
And Mariah Carey, who's third. So
I'm okay with Mariah Carey being third.
She should be. They should all be in. Most of them are. You know, I think Dave Matthews is not the Hall of Fame. It's the Hall of Very Good. Very sells a lot of records and not great music, but whatever. Everybody else should probably get in. But again, three rappers, probably not getting in. Two R&B singers, probably not getting in. Ozzy should get in, not sure. I hope he does as a solo artist. He really deserves it. But he, you know, we'll see.
Would it be wrong of them just to have, like, selections? Like, you know, here's R&B, here's hip-hop, here's rock, here's metal.
They may have to go
solo,
that way.
Here's band.
People are really angry. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, first of all, has never been just rock and roll. From the very beginning, it was conceived of being all genres. The very first class had a gospel singer, a blue Muddy Waters, Mahalia Jackson, Beatles. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was never just only rock. It was never only rock.
Well, I said it before, and I'll say it again. Rock and roll is a genre of music that ended in 1962. So Bill Haley and the Comets, Jerry Lee Lewis, that's rock and roll. Little Richard, the Doors are not rock and roll. They're acid rock. Jim Morrison said in 1969, rock and roll is dead. They have moved on into something else. On what rock and roll means now in 2024 and what it meant in 1975 and 1985 and 1992, rock and roll is shorthand for non-classical music. Music that is not, quote unquote, the arts. Music by people who can't read music.
I think just like you call every photocopy a Xerox, all rock music is rock and roll. All metal music is metal. That's me. That's just me. News check. Over.
I will
shirt
die
check.
On this hill.
I guess you will. But
shirt check for Nick. This is my favorite metal band from 1970. Attila. Keefe, who's in Attila?
Billy Joel.
Billy Joel. So I finally got a Billy Joel t-shirt. He's right there. He's got a mustache. He's in horrible, horrible chain mail and plate mail and fuzzy things. I love this shirt, and I need to go to the Billy Joel show just to wear this shirt.
How miserable does he look in that picture on the shirt?
Horrifically miserable.
He looks so unhappy.
Oh, he hates this. I have this on vinyl. I don't know if I don't remember if I checked it or not already.
You did.
Okay. This is the original cover of the Attila record. I have an 80s repress where they were trying to like make money off the Billy Joel name because Uptown Girl sold a lot of records.
And it did. Billy Joel's 80s records, his 70s records sold millions and he got no money. Luckily, he kept writing hits in the 80s. That Innocent Man album's fucking all bangers. And my shirt check today, before I forget, is Chemist. And this is a long sleeve. For some reason, I'm wearing a long sleeve shirt in the house, and I'm sweaty. Like, I'm not comfortable. I had a different shirt picked out for today, but I wore this in my last interview, and I'm just keeping it on because, like, fuck it.
You know how you know I'm a Hoosier? It's been itching my brain for a week not to have worn this shirt. This shirt showed up on Thursday of last week, and every day I was like, wear the Attila shirt. Wear the Attila shirt, Nick. Nick, why haven't you worn the Attila shirt? That's how we do in South City. You buy a new shirt, you wear it that day. I waited to shirt check.
I appreciate you. Do you want to set up Queen 2, and then I will take over for the track by track?
Sure. I will set up the Queen of the Deuce. We are talking 1974. This is released in March 8th, 1974. In England, things are happening that I don't know what they are because it's England, and we don't learn modern English history. In America, however, the world is changing. We have lost Richard Nixon. He is the first president ever to resign. He would have been the first president ever to be removed via impeachment trial. So in 1974, the Vietnam War has essentially ended, although not officially, and America is moving forward. The rock scene has completely, as it started to change and started to go away, the old guard, as we discussed last week, Led Zeppelin is now, for all intents and purposes, over. We get Physical Graffiti, and then we get some limping output. The what started as Black Sabbath has ended. We now, we're going to get three or four more records from Black Sabbath up until 1979 that are spotty as hell. Pink Floyd has stormed onto the scene, and they are causing a huge shift. We now have the first Kiss record. Kiss, Queen, Pink Floyd, even though Pink Floyd took a while to get there. Changing of the guard. And then we also have, from a little-known country, home to the McKenzie Brothers, the Great White North, Canada's Rush drops their first record this year. I actually saw an original pressing of that on a Canadian record label today on eBay for $3,000. I'm going to point out I did not get a credit card out for that one. So all of a sudden, the world is changing. What everyone thinks of as heavy metal in 1972 is kind of dying. As we all know, heavy metal has been killed and reborn 30 to 40 times in the eyes of the mainstream. Those of us on the inside in the circle know that heavy metal has never died and has always continued. We may lose, we'll lose the Fairweather fans here and there, but metal remains. We also have the most metal Queens record of all time. So 1974 is probably when 70s rock really started. Because one could make the argument that Led Zeppelin, even Black Sabbath to a point, and Deep Purple. Oh, yeah, and Deep Purple is going through their major change. They are now moving on into Deep Purple Mark III with Glenn Hughes and David Coverdale, which I think is the best Deep Purple, but don't tell anybody. Hey, man, Burn is just amazing. Come Taste the Band, though. That sucks ass. Bought it on vinyl for $20 because I'm an idiot. I got it. I got all the albums by that band, including I have a Japanese pressing of Live in Japan by Deep Purple Mark 3.5. Why do I do this to myself? And I still listen to it. So the world is changing. And there's a vacuum. And in that vacuum, we get Queen. Queen drops an interesting record. You know, on most albums, you either have side A and side B, side one, side two, or on Leonard Skinnerd, One for the Road that I listened to today, you have side 1-4 and side 2-3 on two different records, because that is so stupid and I hate those pressings. My Rush Live record is also that way, as is my Jesus Christ Superstar on vinyl. But Queen drops a record that has side white and side black. The outside cover is the first Queen cover in a long line of covers and poses and photo opportunities by Queen, where it's them in front of a black background and Freddie Mercury doing the coffin stuffer pose. Oh God, he died first. Oh Jesus Christ, that's really, really insensitive. Fun fact, Freddie, Mer- Freddie Mercury died on the same day as Eric Carr, and nobody cared about Eric Carr dying.
I know. Well, I know.
Anywho, so this is the first, but this is the first instance of them doing that pose, and that becomes synonymous with Queen. When you picture Queen, you picture this. This little diamond with Freddie Mercury holding his shoulders like he's Wednesday Addams taking a nap. There we go. I changed it up. But side two is side white. And on the inside in the gatefold, which is a gatefold on a single record, which is wrong. It's always wrong. The album, the colors of the band are white. So it's interesting. This is not a concept record. It is a thematic record, however. They also get into a lot of swords and sorcery, some Dungeons and Dragons, and a lot of little stuff here and there. We get a redux of a track from the previous album. We get some really good progressive stuff. And Brian May sings an entire song on this album. And then quickly it devolves into Freddie singing the vast majority, and then Roger Taylor getting a song here and there. I yield my time.
Correct, correct. On all points, good job. The formative years of Queen, we mentioned in the last episode that some things, not just Seven Seas of Rye, were left over. I think the general reception, again, we talked about what a banger Keep Yourself Alive is, but it was a failure in terms of a single. I think the label thought it was going to chart. It did not chart. Later on, it becomes a very popular song, and they played it to death live, of course. And I hope they still do, because it rules. I have never seen Queen, by the way. This is just like I've never got to see them. They were actually a friend of mine that works at Ghost Cult. Queen was his first show ever as a child. I was like, oh, fucking hell. Why? But I just never got to see them.
Unfortunately,
AC/DC and Queen.
I did see AC/DC. I saw them on the Ball Breaker tour, which is one of the which honestly is still one of the greatest shows I've ever seen. Have never seen Queen. I have not seen what passes for Queen these days either, and I actually have no interest in that. But that's just Nick. And
I like Adam Lambert. I would go see them.
I don't have any issue with Adam Lambert. I just, you know, there are certain. For what it would, if they were playing a casino, I would go. And I would pay casino money for it. But I'm not going to pay, because they charge Queen money for it. And you know what? It's their prerogative, and of course, you know, they can. But yeah, I'm not going to go. Unfortunately, Freddie Mercury had already died before I started going to concerts. My first concert was 1992. Freddie died in 1990. And they had basically stopped touring before that point anyway.
That's also true. So they go back to the woodshed to write Queen 2. I love that there's we learned a long time ago not to just rely on Wikipedia, but supposedly Roger Taylor was on record saying he hated the title Queen 2. It was the most unimaginative thing possible, and he's really angry at it that they settled for that. And it's definitely noted to be the heaviest Queen album. Which is crazy if you think about some of the other material they have had over the years. But it's the whole album as a whole is very rockin' and heavy.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten to... oh, God, what's my Metallica covered? Stone Cold Crazy.
Yeah, but that's a whole nother album from now. But, if you don't mind, we'll just go into the track by track. There's not much to... You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Double down on what you're good at. And I think they tried to be a little heavier and, more interesting on the second record. Basically, Roy Thomas Baker producing again with the band, and Joffrey Cable, who's an occasional producer on this record. He produced a couple of whole songs by himself.
Before we get to the track by track, let's take a quick break.
Welcome to The Church of Suicidal. We'll have a sermon and a wonderful recital. We're back.
Dance.
Queen 2, track by track. I have nothing else to add to the preamble. You did a great job.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean it. When I don't like it, I tell you.
You say what you don't like at me on the air. So yeah, I know.
I do. I'm a prick. I got to do better. I'm not a good friend.
I got to do better to make you to not trigger you.
I don't want you to trigger me. There's a few things like
We
don't
want
to see your balls and your butt, but like other than that,
you should see my pants today. I didn't do a pants check. You know how I've been in my Sopranos era.
Are you wearing track pants?
Yeah, lawyer wife got me some last week. She won't tell me how much. She keeps saying to me, take care of those. They were expensive. She won't tell me how much she paid for them. Just for the record, the jacket we got at Goodwill for $4. So well, anything she paid for the pants are like, but look, here, I'll just stick my leg up.
That was the most unappealing leg I have ever seen.
That's because it's black.
And then next, now I really want you to sing like something takes a part of me. Sing some Korn while you're at beatbox.
Sing some Korn. So, okay, here, I'll sing some Korn. I'm getting old. Nobody likes me anymore. Mommy hated me. Bing! There's Korn.
That's pretty good. I love Korn. 30 years of Korn this year.
Yeah, and you know what? They appreciate you.
They do. They definitely do. All right. Queen 2. Let's bring it back from being on Amtrak.
Roll.
Queen
2. Amtrak.
Opens with the 1 minute and 12 second instrumental procession. Not an outstanding track, but okay.
No, I have no need for this. Moving on.
Nick does not like intros, ever.
No, we don't need a 90 second intro into a song that has nothing to do with what's coming or an album. And it's worse on death metal records because whenever I have shuffle on my iPhone, and I'm going to tell a story about my kid here when I finish this story. Whenever any track off of Carcass's amazing reunion record, if you can even call it that, Surgical Steel comes up, it's always the goddamn intro track where it's like it's the overture. And I'm like, bro, can I get the Stainless Steel song or something? No. Every time it comes up. So the kid and I are talking today. You know, she's got her headphones in, her AirPods, listening to Spotify or whatever. She's like, I'm like, what are you doing? Listening to music. I'm like, no, you're not. I don't see any records. She was in the living room. She doesn't listen to records in the living room. And she goes, I'm listening to Spotify. I'm like, Spotify is not real. It's not digital. It's just digital. It's not real. And she gets this look on her face of understanding. Because I said, what happens when Spotify goes away? And all of a sudden, like the reality sets into her brain. And I look at her and go, yeah, you just understood the impermanency of digital recordings. And I'm telling the story in the podcast.
I think that's fine. That's a very good story. A valid story. I have a friend that will not, they do streaming, but they buy their favorite movies on DVD and have like a backup unopened DVD player in the eventuality that streaming goes away, becomes unaffordable, so they can always watch their favorite go-to movies. And it's
have you seen The World's End starring Nick Simon Pegg and Nick Frost? The world gonna end. The robots are gonna eventually try to kill us.
They are gonna kill us. The album proper begins with Father to Son, probably one of the most beloved early Queen songs, if I have to be honest. Written by Brian May. It's a longy boy, 6 minutes. I didn't quite need 6 minutes of this. But I don't know what it's about, but it's a killer song.
I also had no idea what it's about, but I felt left out because I wanted to, like, have a father-to-daughter song. And that's just me. I mean, I'm just being silly. Of course, it's 1970. Anybody who's seen The Adventures of Baron Munchausen understands why it's and son. You know, the little girl goes up to the theater, you know, the playbill, and she crosses out and son and writes daughter. You know, I have a daughter and whatever. Doesn't, you know, end gender patriarchal business, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Father to Son, great song. 6 minutes, yeah, probably a bit much. But you know what? No idea what's going on in this track, but you know what? It's fun.
I, to this day, cannot tell you what those lyrics are about. I will say, by the way, just to not a correction, but just to you know, came out in 1974. So, you know,
that's what I said.
You were like throwing a blanket out there and said this came out in 1970. It's 74. And I know 70. You didn't.
I apologize. Yeah, I meant 70 something.
It's fine. It's fine. I know what you meant, but I just want to make sure the listeners, especially who don't have the benefit of our beautiful faces on YouTube, if they're podcasting.
We have a very smart listener base. And my God, after 111 B50 episodes, they've got to understand that by now my brain goes so fast, sometimes I forget words when it comes out my mouth.
Fair enough. The album is not a concept album, but it does have some loose concepts. As you said, a white side and a black side. So the first white side song is White Queen As It Began, another Brian May complete composition and writer. Vocals, lead vocals by Freddie. Good song, kind of leaning into the 70s rock thing, kind of reminded me of Grand Funk, a little bit of Zeppelin, a little bit of, you know, not prog, but like a little more straight ahead. Is that fair or unfair to you?
No, that's completely fair. It's unaffected rock. You know, prog is disaffected rock. Metal is disaffected rock. This is just, you know what? We heard an Eric Clapton track. We heard a Cream song after the first couple records. We heard something on, you know, Led Zeppelin 4. It's just 70s straight ahead. Let's, you know, frankly, let's light up a doob. Light up a doob, crack open a Budweiser, or, you know, a Carling, if you're in England. Wait, not Carling. Carling. I was thinking Carlsberg, but that's Belgian. You know, crack open a Carling, a Guinness if you're in Ireland, just smoke a doob, drink a beer, and get in on that 70s rock nut bartery, and just have a good time. It's, God only knows what's going on here and going through their brains when they wrote and sang this, but fun song again. This is the most okayest Queen record. There's no Soft Underbelly. There's no Super Highs. You know, we're not going to get a Bohemian Rhapsody. We're not going to get a Stone Cold Crazy. We're definitely not going to get a Keep Yourself Alive. We're going to have, I mean, there's not, spoiler alert, there's not a single classic Queen song on this record.
I disagree. Let's not okay. go here. You're going there's too no... far, and we're only on the third track. Like, don't sum up the album too soon.
I'm not summing. I'm not.
Now I'm correcting you. You summed it up a little too much. All right. By the way, I cannot think of White Queen and Black Queen without thinking of Alice in Wonderland. I can't think of White Queen and Black Queen without thinking of X-Men villains. So just to let you know. Track number four is Someday One Day, a solid song, and the first, to my knowledge, complete and solo lead vocal performance of Sir Brian May, CBE, and astrophysicist.
Dr. Sir Brian May, CBE. CBE.
Also, you know, Giraffe Dick and, you know, great guitar soloist and writer. It's a pretty good song. Pretty good.
You know, I was expecting the vocals on this track because I noticed that it was him singing. Spoiler alert or truth time. I had never heard this record front to back before today. So when I saw that he sang the song, I was expecting a much bigger difference in the vocals. And there really isn't. He's got a very melodic voice. It's very reminiscent of Freddie. Not as good as Freddie, of course, because, I mean, Freddie is, you know, he's the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of rock vocalists, especially in the 70s. I would say he's even a better vocalist than Robert Plant and Geddy Lee combined. Just Nick talking. Brian May did not have that big of a drop-off. And because it was very similar, it also makes absolutely no sense for Brian May to sing any songs going forward. But good song, fun song. It's moving the record along, and not in a bad way.
I think their approach early was like, everybody's talented in this band, let them fly and see what sticks. Obviously, look, Freddie, we're going to continue to just praise and heap praise and pray to Frederick.
How can you not?
How could you not? You have the greatest singer ever maybe in your band. But like, they didn't not have Brian May sing more songs because he wasn't good. They just have Freddie. Roger, you know, gets a little bit in on every album. There's very few albums where he was not involved as a lead singer or co-lead singer.
With Roger, you get a different approach. You get a different timbre. You get a different sound. With Brian, you get Dollar Store Freddie.
I guess.
I mean, everybody compared to Freddie who's in that mode is going to be Dollar Store
Freddie.
Yeah,
it's just not fair. But
like, it's not. Brian's not fair, but it's true.
If you've heard Brian's solo work, he's a very good singer. Roger is a very, as I said last week, Roger could have been the singer of his own band if he wasn't the drummer in Queen. He's
definitely a better singer than Peter Criss. Said it.
Well, Jesus. Anyway, The Loser in the End closes side one, and I think this is a low-key, exceptional song. It's just not like, I think fans love this song. I don't think it's, like, popular, but it's beloved. Great song, written completely by Roger, who is still going by Roger Meadows Taylor on this album, his full formal name, and lead vocal by Roger. Great job. Great song.
Love this song. This is when you're going to use alternative vocalists, it's important to put it in the right spot. And closing out the side one is the perfect spot for this particular vocal. Loved it.
It's also pretty heavy. It's a heavy song. It's a rocking song. It's not chill.
That it is.
It's a rocking song with a good lyrics, good everything.
Very little chill in this whole record, honestly, though.
Yeah, that's true.
In a very good way.
Side two opens with arguably one of the most popular Queen songs among the fandom, even though it wasn't a hit song, Ogre Battle, covered many times by fantasy, power metal, and thrash metal bands, written completely by Freddie. Yes, that is his guitar riff. Maybe the first song he ever wrote on the guitar that I know of. And maybe he wrote some acoustic stuff that I don't know about, but like he first electric guitar, picked up the guitar, wrote Ogre Battle. Holy shit, bro.
Okay, can I point out one thing? Before I move forward, this is legitimately not Dungeons & Dragons metal. Do you know why?
Why?
Because Dungeons & Dragons did not exist yet.
Okay, nerd.
I am a nerd.
Not necessary.
It's science fiction
and fantasy.
I made a pair of Dungeons & Dragons Chuck Taylors on the Converse.com website yesterday that I didn't order. I should have ordered them. They were awesome. Anyway, I can't hear you.
I made a pair of custom Ghost Cult Skechers that I'm going to eventually pull the trigger on, but right now money is low. So.
I do have a custom pair of Chuck Taylors that I wear with my Blues jerseys, which has my online handle, Batra, on them because I'm a tool.
You are.
So Ogre Battle is a Lord of the Rings song because the term ogre at this point in time had started in Lord of the Rings. Just kind of point that out. This is a fun song, and the idea of Queen swimming in the same waters as Ronnie James Dio will never stop being funny to me. You know, they went deeper into the Tolkien mythology than Led Zeppelin did. And for the love of God, why do I keep confusing Led Zeppelin and Lynyrd Skynyrd when I'm trying to talk about these guys? I know who they are. I have all their records, all of them.
Are you yielding time? I don't know what you're doing.
I'm angry at Nick.
Angry at yourself, I guess. Maybe it's the L thing. Ah, who knows? Yeah, Ogre Battle, great song. Really great song. Actually, like, over time, I know why people gravitate to this. It's heavy, it's got the fantasy lyrics, Freddie, great vocal, such a killer song. The next song is a bit of a controversial track, The Fairy Fellers Masterstroke, with the hyphen, you gotta pronounce it as kind of a hyphenated word, completely written by Freddie. It's a shorty, second shortest official song on the album. That's not a intro track that we throw away. But interestingly enough, it's from a book. It is not a remark on Freddie's sexuality. We talked about this last week. He was not out until later in life. He was not out most of the time he was in Queen. He definitely was, effeminate. He definitely played with gender roles, both lyrically, visually, physically, in music videos in the 80s. But this was not like a pointed misdirect by him. According to, again, Wikipedia and Roger Taylor, it's just a story that Freddie liked. It was not a double entendre about himself. There's a pun in the title, as it was in the book about the same name.
Is stroke the double entendre?
I mean, master stroke. Clearly.
Master stroke? I mean,
there's many.
I have ideas.
I'm sure Frederick did too.
I heard some things. I hear things.
It's a good song. It's a good song. Wouldn't throw it off. I wouldn't throw any of these songs off the island, but it's good. It's not great.
This is one of those songs that's like an idea that wasn't finished. This would have fit very well on Black Sabbath's Seventh Star, because Black Sabbath's Seventh Star has seven songs and like two of them are finished, and the rest are like this. And what's unfortunate is there really is a good start here. Would I kick it off? Kinda. Just because it's not done. And I mean, I want a rare steak, but I don't want a rare cake. And this is rare cake. This is like gooey cake that's not gooey butter cake for my St. Louis friends.
Gooey butter cake also sounds like a sexual reference, but okay.
It is not a sexual reference. It is a cake made of butter and sugar. It is delicious, and I am remiss for not getting you some while you were here.
Well, I couldn't have it now anyway. All right. Nevermore is the next track.
Nobody can have it. It's sugar fat poison, but it's okay. So good.
Good to know. The next track is Nevermore, and it's basically a coda to the Fairy Fellers Masterstroke. And apparently, live, they would play these three songs together, Ogre Battle, the Fairy Fellers Masterstroke, and Nevermore as like a medley. I don't need this track. I don't hate this track. It's a nice ending. It's like the calm before the storm of the next song, but I don't need it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, these three songs should have been just like one longy boy. This could have easily fit on, whatever the 8-minute track is on, Night at the Opera. I can't remember the song titles anymore. Like side one, track one, side two is an 8-minute long. That's what this should have been, you know, because these are movements of the same song is what it is.
Fair enough. The next track is The March of the Black Queen. The epic sounding song is an epic song, actually. It's a song that apparently predates Queen for Freddie. He was writing this in his formative days. It's the second longest. It's been considered the precursor to Bohemian Rhapsody as a musical production, and it was never a single, but apparently another fan favorite. They used to play it live and usually would like use that to intro Bohemian Rhapsody. So clearly, even in their mind, it's a similar song for them.
The song I was referring to is the Prophet song, by the way. March of the Black Queen, great song. And have we mentioned at this point that Freddie has written side two?
He has written all side two.
Freddie Mercury is side two. He is kind enough to let Roger Taylor, you know, sing a bit on this track. But this is a great opposite to White Queen. Interestingly enough, White Queen written by Sir Dr. Brian May, CBE, and March of the Black Queen is written by Freddie. That is, it's a nice juxtaposition. It's a nice call and response. It is a longy boy, and you know what? Queen, from time to time, will get a little long-winded, and they were always really good about not getting overly long-winded. So whenever they did get long, this song deserved it, and made the song better. You know, they've already learned how to do this on their second record. Good work, boys.
Fair enough. And, you know, a skill some people never get. I also want to say the juxtaposition, not harmonies, but the lead vocal juxtaposition of Freddie and Roger is awesome, and I'm sorry they didn't do more of this.
Yeah, I can't think of any other Queen songs where they did trading vocals of any sort, and they had three people that could have done it. Again, Brian May, I don't see the point because he's like Freddie, but none of, anyway. But Roger and Freddie should have done more songs together, just like Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley should have done more songs together where they sang harmony, where they traded. I mean, there was so much stuff that if you're a five-tool player and you don't steal bases, what's the point?
Jose!
And I'm Mark. They call me Jose! And I'm Mark. Basically. I play first base. Basically. I love that song.
Did we not mention that Whitey Herzog died? We should mention Whitey Herzog died.
The White Rat. What they said on the sports radio yesterday was that, or perhaps it was the morning show this morning, I don't remember. Time's lost all meaning since the pandemic. That Whitey Herzog created basically the concept of the Cardinal Way. And Cardinals baseball is very sanctimonious, very, you know, traditional. We are the second oldest baseball club in the country, only to the Cincinnati Redlegs or Cincinnati Reds. And Whitey Herzog died at age 92, elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2014 or 2010. So I don't know, a number of years ago. So he had time to enjoy that. And he was at the Cardinals home opener this year. And I grew up in Whitey Ball. And Whitey Ball is still my favorite kind of baseball, where you've got You know, number one, two, you got, you know, Vince Coleman, Ozzie Smith, Willie McGee, 1, 2, 3, followed by Jack Clark. That's how you do, boy. You get one of them guys on base, and they're already at third, and then Jack Clark nails a home run, so those stolen bases didn't even matter.
I will say nobody was more hated when I was a kid as an opposing manager than Whitey. He infuriated other managers and teams with his behavior.
I can remember. He was Mike Martz of baseball. 15 years before Mike Martz existed. I can remember watching a game against Chicago. And Todd Worrell, this is after they had brought in Lee Smith, one of the greatest closers of all time, to replace Todd Worrell, who was the greatest closer of the National League at that point. Todd Worrell then transitions into setup man. So they're playing Chicago. And this is back when the National League was the National League, when it was checkers versus chess. And Whitey has this idea. Oh, I know what I'll do. I will bring in Todd Worrell to bat to pitch to the righty. The lefty's going to come up, because this is back in the day when you go lefty-righty, lefty-righty, lefty-righty in your lineup, and then pitcher. So what Whitey does is he moves Todd Worrell to right field for one batter. And he even brings out the 80s sunglasses that wrap around your baseball hat and flip down over your eyes. He's even got those. And then they get into an argument about will he get his warm-up pitches when he comes back in for the next batter. And the thing that cracks me up the most is I can remember during the Tony La Russa years, everybody hated him in St. Louis. Tony La Russa was hated in St. Louis while he was here. Everybody misses him now. But because, Tony La Russa thinks he knows more than you about baseball. Well, you know what? I hope he knows more about me than baseball, because God damn it, I'm just some jackass drinking beer watching this. And because he does goofy things like bats Mark McGuire third and has the pitcher bat eighth. Whitey Herzog's throwing pitchers at shortstop for a batter just to get to the next one. And you're going to say that he didn't think he was smarter than the rest of us? Yet he did. No, Whitey Herzog did not think he was smarter than the rest of us about baseball. He fucking knew it. And he created an entire genre of baseball and beloved, universally beloved in St. Louis. And it's going to suck not having him around.
Sorry for that interruption of the track listing, but I felt like I should talk to you about Whitey Herzog. The next to last track on the album is the piano ballad Funny How Love Is. It's all right. Nice vocal from Freddie. It's just kind of there.
It's pre-Bohemian Rhapsody. It's Bohemian Rhapsody take one.
I think the other song is more of that, not this, but okay.
Either way, it's on this record.
It is on the record. And this is also one of those tracks produced by John Cable. And then finally, as you mentioned earlier in the warm-up, the final and closing track is kind of clever back in the album days to put the single at the end of the album. The Seven Seas of Rye is the... because I can't sing it in that range. That's the last track. I always thought it was longer, the full version, but it's just another minute and a half longer than the embryo version we heard on the first record. And it's a great song. It's their first hit song.
If you stick them together, it's barely a single.
Well, now, yeah. It's terrific.
Yeah, if you put two of them.
It's definitely the best song on the album, I think. And it's fantastic. It's a lucky they didn't pursue more songs like this. Fanciful, classical music-inspired thing. Again, Freddie, not musically trained, writing like a Bach fugue piano part. It's crazy.
Fun song. I would not say it's the best song on the record. My personal favorite is going to be Ogre Battle, but I'm partial to ogres. That's just how I roll.
I am. Ogres are like onions. They have layers. Also, this was the single. It was released as a single. Was a hit single. And the B-side is the very popular fan favorite See What a Fool I've Been, which sounds like a very Zeppelin-y blues song. That surprised me that they even made this.
No wonder
that it wasn't on the record proper. It doesn't really sound like a Queen song. It just sounds like an idea they had that they were like, nah, not this one.
It sounds like a blind chitlin blues song that they stole from Mark McKinney pretending to be a black guy in Kids in the Hall.
Okay. Fair enough. Is
that not Blind Chitlin? I mean, he's somebody. Yeah, I don't know.
No idea. Blind somebody, somebody. So that's the record. Pretty good. I'd give it a B, personally, in terms of a second record. To me, there's no song on here that's better than Keep Yourself Alive, but, you know, commercially it was a flop. But, you know, you do have three or four excellent songs on here. It's not, there's nothing bad on it. There's just some of it's not outstanding. We in the next record, we just start to have all bangers going forward, for whatever reason.
This record, as I said earlier, this record does not have a single classic song on it. You know, if you look at Aerosmith's, you know, next song or second album, Get Your Wings, there's a couple of songs that stay in the set forever. There's a couple of songs that stay on Greatest Hits forever. Here we have a whole mess of songs that largely are forgotten out of the classic rock lexicon. None of this sticks in rock radio. None of this is on classic rock radio. There are, I would say, a couple of excellent songs. However, they are very different than what we come to know as Queen going forward. So I can understand why Ogre Battle does not beat out Keep Yourself Alive. It doesn't beat out Stone Cold Crazy. It doesn't, you know, and I'm repeating songs, of course. It doesn't beat out Mr. Fahrenheit. It's not as good as Flash Gordon. Which, how good is Flash Gordon? Are we doing that one in this series?
Talked about it last week. I don't know. We'll see.
You know what we could do? We could just do like a series of soundtracks done by a singular band, and then Flash Gordon has to be in it. Anyway, you know, yes, I would give this record a solid B, even lacking any classicalness. It's like I said, it's just not, it just doesn't have those classic tracks. It doesn't have those long-standing bangers. But is it a fun record? Yeah. Is it a good record? Definitely. And I'm probably going to get it on vinyl after hearing it all the way through now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a future buy for me. I think that's it. Do we have anything else today? I'll take us home if we don't. I think it's my turn.
I have nothing else. Take us home.
Is it my turn or your turn? I think it's my turn.
I'll go with your turn.
All right, fine. You, all of us have been listening to the Glacially Musical Podcast. I am Ghost Cult Keefe, the co-host of the show, at ghostcultmag.com, at Ghost Cult Keefe, at Ghost Cult Mag on all the socials. Check us out for metal news, tours, interviews with bands, yada, yada, yada. All kinds of fun things. As you know, the host here is Nicholas Cameron. You know him as Glacially Musical, Glacially sometimes underscore musical, sometimes Nick underscore no, sometimes underscore C, on all the things.
N-I-K, just for the record, N-I-K.
N-I-K. M-O-U-S-E, Nicky Mouse. Anyway.
Do not. No. I am thoroughly anti-Disney. Do not connect me to that stupid crap.
Unfortunately, they have the Mandalorian and the X-Men cartoon, so I'm...
The Mandalorian is not that good after season one.
Oh, stop it. I am their bitch.
I said what I said.
The Glacially Musical Podcast does not play in Peoria, but however, Nick said what he said, and you got to deal with it.
And Rocky Hockey is the coach in Peoria.